This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the 45th podcast. I'm here today with Siraj.
How we doing?
Not too bad. And we are here on Manafort Watch. It is Monday evening, and allegedly the jury is waiting until 6:15. Are they asked to happen until 6:15 today to deliberate? We are now, what, just a day short of 3 weeks of the trial?
Yeah. It's gone by like a blur.
Yeah, they were speed demons. And the jury's been out for like 3 days now, I think, in total. They have yet to reach a decision. We'll see if 6:15 is the magic number for them. I kind of doubt it.
6:05 here on the East Coast on Monday evening, so it could be happening right this second. Could happen any moment if you're listening to this.
Yeah, and it was an interesting trial. I think that overall, Mueller's team was solid. So was Manafort's team was pretty predictable. There weren't any real big surprises I can think of, other than some of the little sideshow stuff about potential involvement in the Trump campaign in certain parts, which they try to not get deep into at all. It's a very technical.
Yeah, I think also Rick Gates revealed that he was having an extramarital affair. That was new.
Weren't there like six affairs too? I can't remember. I saw something about that. And I was like,
I don't remember how many actually he had. I just know that there was an existence of at least one.
Let's be real. Manafort lives in a glass house there. Did you ever read his daughter's text messages?
No.
Yeah, they're pretty. She had issues with her dad, valid issues. Okay. Let's just say that nothing that we heard about Gates rivals some of the stuff that Manafort's gotten up to.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And this is all public information now.
Well, it's you know, they're hacked and leaked, so they've been out there for a while.
So obtained illegally, but now public.
Yes.
I see. What a day.
Yeah, but that was actually last year. And that's when the daughter talks about how Manafort would, you know, use his like secret email exchange method by writing drafts in a shared email account to pass on messages to people.
Wow.
Yeah, he really thinks he's kind of a 007 there. So we'll see. Right now, we're waiting for the verdict. I got to say, I'm not feeling overly optimistic right now.
Why is that? So give me your legal analysis of this current trial and why. Because we've talked earlier in the day about how you think it's actually not going to result in a guilty verdict.
Yeah, well, it could be a split verdict. There's a lot of charges here. First of all, it's a technical wonky area, and juries sometimes have trouble following along with that. You know, the defense, I wouldn't say did anything spectacularly well, but they were solid. I didn't see any big missteps. They were playing defensive. They weren't trying to go on the offense anywhere. I won't say that they went like above and beyond. They didn't like pull out any amazing tricks or anything, but they're solid. The real issue here is, one, the political matter, subject matter, because there's almost certainly going to be Trump voters in that jury. They're going to feel like this is a referendum on Trump and not just a very, very, very mundane, normal, white-collar criminal issue, which it is. And I will say mostly I'm feeling pessimistic because the way the judge ran the trial. He was definitely very vigorously interjecting.
D.S. Ellis,
yes.
for our listeners.
Yes. You know, it wasn't like he was like, I don't want to say out of control or that it was like, it was within the upper range of normal in terms of judicial intervention.
He's an opinionated judge who just so happened to be overseeing a federal court case. That's one of the more high profile ones of the year.
It's not such opinionated as much as like he assumes that there's only one answer and it's his every time.
Well, that's what I mean by opinionated.
But juries are really much, they are affected by that. They heard that judge say multiple times, like weighing on the scales, like say like, oh, the prosecution's doing something bad. And several times he was just factually incorrect. And that is going to influence the jury. So, and also, of course, there's like kind of like a superstition among trial attorneys that anytime the jury comes back with a question about reasonable doubt, you can just give up and go home. And they did that here.
So that was a big deal on Friday. The jury was deliberating over the definition of reasonable doubt. Was it the whole term or was it just the...
I mean, it's always the same kind of question because it's never well-defined anyway. And juries are expected to just understand what it means. It's not necessarily the case that the prosecution always loses when the jury asks that, but there's there's a reason. There's kind of a truism that if that's the jury's question, then you know you're
Your goose is cooked.
Yeah. On the other hand, there are some.
At least for the prosecution, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's bad for the prosecution. If the jury comes back asking questions like, I want to know more about the elements of this crime, that's bad for the defense, typically. I mean, I'm speaking in generalities here. It's not, yeah, no. It's not exactly a scientific.
I think it's definite until we actually see a verdict. And since there's so many charges, it's not like they're going to rule one way or the other on all of them. They're going to rule on each individual count. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
He could still, of all the number of charges, he could still be guilty on at least a few of them, if not all of them. And that might be enough for, members of the resistance to say, hey, you know, try to link that to Trump. And but again, like, the political spin is so heavy here that no matter what happens, it's going to, you know, the political spin machine is going to work incessantly for the next news cycle to try to make this either a, you know, indictment of Trump or a vindication of him.
Yeah. But there's, of course, another trial next month against Manafort in D.C., where likely they'll have a much more hands-off judge. I will say, I guess, for me, the reason I started feeling pessimistic about the outcome of this trial in terms of the prosecution's chances is that the evidence that they needed to tell their story was not getting in. And for case like this, that's so, I mean, obviously I do white-collar criminal defense, so like I'm biased towards the documents. And like, to me, there's solid proof from what we've seen that he's guilty. Like, that's not really even in question at this point.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't even need witnesses to testify. Like, have witnesses there to like validate the emails and the loan applications and to say what's what and to prove it's true, sure. But if you get that evidence in, honestly, there's no doubt here that he is guilty. However, juries like to have a story. And there is no good story here about what
Manafort did and why he did it.
And the why. And the judge was like being way heavy handed what he considered to be like prejudicial information. And he's like, oh, you can't bring that in because that's going to make the jury hate him. And yes, obviously, it's an important consideration. But in this case where like it's basically been, you can't use the word oligarch in this trial, but where it's a bunch of oligarchs who are paying people to help them stay in power and using that money, using money from the state to pay off those people who are then laundering it back to the U.S., telling that whole story matters. And without that story to like explain each step of the emails, each step of the loan documents, the jury can say, well, we're not really sure what's going on here. Let's call it reasonable doubt and go home.
Huh. Speaking of, you know, current probes and courts and trials, I mean, what we're seeing right now from the Mueller investigation into matters of President Trump's dealings with his campaign and with what he knew about any Russian collusion or Russian meetings. There was a lot of activity happening this weekend, specifically with the White House counsel, Don McGahn. And before I get into McGahn, there's just a bit of news coming in from Reuters, from Jeff Mason, who's a White House correspondent with Reuters. This is breaking news to us, but by the time you're listening to this, it's probably not.
Oh, God, what is it?
The tweet reads, "Real Donald Trump tells Reuters he has chosen not to be involved in Mueller probe, but is, quote, totally allowed, end quote, to be if he wanted to." And then he says, quote, "I've decided to stay out. Now I don't have to stay out. As you know, I can go in and I could do whatever. I could run it if I want," end quote. whatever that means. So that's So let me just reread the quote. "I've decided to stay out. Now I don't have to stay out. As you know, I can go in and I could do whatever. I could run it if I want." So
he just declared himself above the law.
Well, I don't
know. You cannot. If you can run an investigation into yourself, you are above the law.
I don't know what he means, though, by "I could run it if I want." Because if he says "I could run it if I want," the logical conclusion that anyone would make is that he would end it, in which case it would go to your point, Susan, that he believes he's above the law. But at the same time, maybe he's saying that he could run it more efficiently if he were in Robert Mueller's shoes. That's the thing, is like, how do you really parse that?
Come on. This is what he always does. He says vague nonsense. And then when people are busy like debating each word,
but it's important to know what exactly he's saying, because Trump's words do matter.
If he used words like people do, like normal humans and normal politicians, it would, but he doesn't. He uses words to get agendas across, to power struggles.
And I've always looked for clarification on this, because Trump has gone after the media so many times by calling it fake news media, but he never get into the specifics of what fake news is.
That's the point. That's the design. And he's trying to be vague to help himself.
This is unhelpful.
Well, the vagueness is purposeful here. like he's not going to, he's learned that if he tries to say things with a little bit of cover, I didn't think much cover, like just the thinnest veneer of like, of whatever plausible deniability or unplausible deniability, people run with it. They're like, we don't know for sure that Trump wants to do this because he added these nonsense words in front that have no possible interpretation in the English language. So it's not clear what he meant to do here. It's obvious what this means, though.
There are a few other tweets also coming from Jeff.
No.
but these are a bit older, but I just want to read them anyways, because he was asked if he would take Mueller's security clearance away. And then he said to Reuters that he hasn't given that a lot of thought. That would be very interesting if he took away a security clearance, knowing that Mueller served as the former FBI director under George W. Bush. And then in another tweet from Jeff Mason, Donald Trump tells Reuters that speaking to Mueller's team could be a perjury. So going with that line of thinking, it's pretty hard to say. I think it's highly unlikely that Trump will ever get in front of Mueller. And that's why Don McGahn comes into question. And what's interesting about McGahn is at least the New York Times reported that McGahn sat down with Mueller's team, spent over 30 hours with his team answering questions, providing documents, again, for over 30 hours over the past 9 months. And Trump is now calling that article into question, calling it fake news. But I think what's interesting, the biggest takeaway, at least from that report, is that the investigators, according to sources, now, of course, we don't know if this report is fully accurate, but if we take the reporting as accurate, you know, the investigators said that they were pretty surprised by Don McGahn's candor and basically the amount of information that he was providing to Mueller's team. It was, in a way, very surprising because it seemed as if McGahn was basically taking a very, you know, careful approach to protect himself, like what we call a CYA move, a cover your ass move. Part of my French. I know you've said the F word many times, Susan, but...
Me? How do you?
It's okay. I do when I'm not on the air. But yeah, McGahn was providing a lot of information about the dealings within the White House. And again, McGahn's a White House counsel. He's not Trump's personal attorney. That's Rudy Giuliani. So Giuliani has been on the offense, kind of calling that report into question because McGahn still serves on the White House. They can't fully trash him. So going after the report is what their current strategy is here. And I don't know what level of accuracy the reporting is, but if McGahn gave that amount of information, it should probably make a lot of people in the White House, or make them scratch their heads, I should say, because that's what exactly could he be saying for 30 hours over the course of 9 months, and how many documents could he have given to help himself and maybe tarnish Trump? That could be a pretty big deal.
But you did miss the best part of that story.
What was that?
It wasn't just a CYA move on McGahn's part. He actually thought that Trump was trying to set him up to take the fall.
Oh, yeah.
So he reversed it.
I did miss that. Yeah, that was but again, that's why I guess I kind of skipped the step there saying it was a CYA move, because that was the initial thinking of McGahn was that he was getting thrown under the bus, which, you know, in this White House is been known to do. I mean, people in the White House, it's very cutthroat. It's cutthroat in DC in general, but it seems to be a new level of throwing people under the bus.
It's a literal pit of vipers. And I mean the word literally. So I have very strong opinions on this, but there is definitely one best pant in the whole world, and that is Betta Brand, because they have the dress pant yoga pants. They look like work pants, but they're yoga pants. Have you ever tried them, Siraj?
I have not, because I don't do yoga, but...
That's the point. You don't have to do yoga for it.
Really?
They look like work pants. They are amazing. They look just like regular work pants, like a suit pant you might wear, but secretly the yoga pants. I have definitely... I'm basically now giving myself up here, but I have come to overly rely on them because you're like a ninja. Or like a spy, like no one knows. Everyone like, oh, look at her. She's all fancy and going to work and looking all fancy. Nuh-uh, they're yoga pants.
Well, I would appreciate it if my girlfriend wore more yoga pants around the house.
And she can wear these to work and no one knows. Betta Brand is fantastic. They've got lots of designs, lots of options. Any kind of work pant you want to imitate, they got it. And it's still a yoga pant. They're comfortable. I mean, I guess the idea is you wear it to work and you're comfortable, but I wear one in the house. Honestly, try them today. You are not going to regret it. And the only downside is you might never go back to wearing actual work clothes.
Well, if you want to actually get a pair, you visit BettaBrand.com and use our code 45th to get 20% off yours. Millions of women agree that these are the most comfortable pants you'll ever wear to work. That's BettaBrand.com, BettaBrand.com. Use our code 45th and get 20% off of your dress pant yoga pants.
And never wear real work pants again.
Or never wear pants again.
That too. Well, no. You can pull it off. Otherwise, go Better Brand. So the New York Times article tries to portray this as like McGahn misread what was happening. He assumed he was being set up and he acted based on that assumption, but really Trump just didn't even know what he was doing. I'm not so sure that's a safe assumption. It's possible that McGahn was totally right and that he was being set up and that he blocked that from happening.
Well, I do find it interesting that I don't know what level of Trump, you know, what Trump knew before McGahn actually went in. Trump is saying now that he gave McGahn permission to speak with Mueller and his team. It's possible that he did not or did not know about it and that he's trying to spin it as if he's fully in control. I sense a teeny bit of panic coming from his Twitter account focusing on this subject just because I think he feels like now he's not really that much in control of what's going on.
Well, the second best part of that article was about how this whole strategy of having McGahn talk. So they could have invoked executive privilege. They want to here. They could have done that. Maybe not for everything, for a lot of it. They didn't. And apparently that was because Donald Trump's initial counsel, I know he's changed teams like 10 times already, but the initial counsel back in 2017 talked to Trump. Trump told them he did nothing wrong. Nothing happened. And they believed him. So they based their strategy based on their assumption that their client was telling them the truth, which is incredible because... why would you believe him?
I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, but apparently that's what, like, honestly, it seems like, you know, they actually, at least Ty Cobb was, like, totally on board with this. Trump did nothing wrong. Trump's telling us the truth. Let's base a strategy, a defense strategy, based on the assumption that there's nothing here and try and get through this as quick as possible. You know, it's not a bad strategy if you're correct in your assumption that your client's telling you the truth, nothing happened.
Right.
No verdict. No verdict in the Manafort trial.
What do you mean?
They broke for the evening.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know because then we don't have to talk about it yet. Yeah. I mean, if it breaks any day after that, that would be better because at least gives us some time to analyze what happened.
I bet it's going to be a hung jury. Just the way they're going. We'll see.
Well, that's too bad. But, you know, back to the issue with respect to Mueller. I mean, Trump wants it to end by September 1st and, you know, it's August 20th. Right now,
Trump wanted it to end by Thanksgiving last year.
I mean, I know he wants it to end, period. And I know he thinks it's going to impact the 2018 midterm elections, and it very well could. But I feel like it's not, I feel like the Mueller probe doesn't have as much impact on, or it doesn't weigh on voters' minds nearly as much as I think Trump thinks it does.
They're keeping a low profile. That they are not actively interfering or trying to interfere in the political process at all. They are not taking steps based on, like, I mean, they're not. They're keeping a low profile as much as they can. They're not leaking a damn thing. There are some serious concerns here with interfering with the election. That's a real issue they have to contend with. But I think you're right. I don't think that this is quite, I mean, based on what we know right now, the voters have the information they've had basically for 6 months or longer now. There's not been a major change in, like, their information base tonight.
Huh.
Like, well, over the past, like, from now till what? Probably end of last year? It's been, ever since they had the first indictments come down, I think voters have mostly been roughly in the same place they
are. Yeah, I don't think this is going to make or break many voters going one way or the other. I think if you look at the individual candidates, I think people will kind of make the decision themselves whether they really want the current state of dysfunction in Washington. And that's been the top issue for many voters, at least according to Gallup, for the last, you know, few months consistently. I mean, like they consistently poll ahead that, you know, government dysfunction is the top issue that we need to get rid of. And, you know, obviously every election, it seems to come down to that. But with Trump and the Republicans holding both House and Senate, it's pretty hard to say that they're going to keep both chambers of Congress given how unpopular the president is.
You never know. It's certainly not a, I mean, they're not the favorites, but that doesn't guarantee anything. Not to mention, Trump is actually supporting Russian measures to interfere in the election. So we'll see how that plays out. And there's like that crazy story out of Florida. Have you seen that?
What happened in Florida?
It's still, I can't make heads or tails of whether it's valid or not. There's a lot of disputes about it. But there are reports from people who should know about the Russian government being inside the Florida election system.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Sorry. That was just the...
It's not really clear what's going on, but it's disturbing. And it's definitely not been refuted yet. So...
Yeah, I mean, you should obviously be as careful as you possibly can. And that's a downside to electronic voting. And I mean, I understand the like level of convenience it is to try to count ballots. But of course, you always got to worry about outside interference.
Yeah. And this is why I'm really paying attention to the Georgia race this year for governor, because
it's Stacey Abrams and who's a Republican
Kemp.
Now.
Kemp.
Brian Kemp.
Who has done more than anyone to make sure Georgia is extremely insecure.
Are you from Georgia, Susan?
I am.
Okay.
And he's the one who oversaw like the purging of the voting servers after there's a lawsuit filed to challenge some of the questionable results.
Huh.
And he's actively trying to make sure that you cannot oversee Georgia's elections. In addition to doing things like being part of the government is closing down like 7 out of 9 polling stations in a majority black county.
Well, I mean, you probably know more about this race than I do, but it would be nice if, I know I don't like to play into the whole identity politics, but it'd be pretty cool if Stacey Abrams made some waves and upset him.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
I honestly don't even care who's running against him. I just want Kemp to lose. But
Stacey Abrams sticks out to... because she's the first African-American woman to be nominated by a major party in the gubernatorial election. So, I mean, it's a big deal. It's, Barack Obama level big, although Barack Obama is definitely way bigger because first African-American president.
But still, it would be definitely some shockwaves through the Georgia political establishment.
Oh, yeah. And also, there are good things about everything with the midterm elections going on right now. You get a lot of firsts of everything. It just so happens that for some of these candidates, the cards are stacked against them in such a way that it's next to impossible to, get any traction going. So,
yeah. Well, it could be kind of like a Roy Moore thing on a smaller scale or like a less extreme scale, because Kemp is not Moore, but he's also pretty terrible. So we'll see what happens when you have a traditional conservative white dude who has some big negatives, who's up against a competent Democrat.
Was Kemp the candidate that had the ad with his possible daughter's boyfriend and he had a gun?
I did not hear that, but I'm honestly not going to roll that out at all.
There was a gubernatorial candidate from Georgia. I can't remember his name. I got to search this one.
I just looked it up, and apparently in a campaign ad, Kemp points a gun at a teenager.
It is Brian Kemp.
Yeah. No, he's terrible. So.
yes, that's right. That's such a funny ad. It does look like he's pointing a gun in a way, but it also, I would say he's kind of pointing it off the direction of him. And I thought that when I initially saw it, because if you watch the full ad, like he's not pointing it directly at him, like he's going to shoot him. He just loads it as he's talking about like possibly dating his daughter. But
oh,
yeah,
God,
it's such a wild ad.
Huh?
Anyways, those are the type of funny things that you catch from midterm elections is the wild ads. Like it's like a Ron DeSantis ad. Ron DeSantis is running for governor, the Republican. In Florida. He had an ad about, I think, involving his wife and his infant daughter or infant son. I can't recall about how he's not obsessed with President Trump. And then like it shows all these examples of him like, draping his baby in like a Make America Great Again hat and flag. And it's just really it's quite amusing. But nothing will be as amusing as the Don Blankenship cocaine Mitch ad. That is by far one of my favorite things ever.
You know what the least amusing thing about possible upcoming elections is?
Apart from the racism, of course. But yes, go ahead.
Avenatti apparently exploring a presidential bid.
Oh, yes, Michael Avenatti. Oh, you know, God. He blocked me on Twitter, right?
No, but maybe I should mute him or get him to block me because I'm so tired.
He blocked me because I, because of all the I didn't even tag him in the tweet. But just to make a long story short, I basically called him out without even tagging him. Called him out for being a grifter. And next thing I know, he blocked me. Because, like, I think if no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, I think you could recognize whatever Avenatti is doing, you know, from getting out ahead of the Stormy Daniels, you know, being Stormy Daniels' attorney, and then going out and on a lot of cable news shows and commenting on politics in general. I think it's pretty easy to tell that he was trying to elevate his own platform. And the fact that he's running for president actually isn't that surprising at all.
I thought he was going for a cable news show. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. I mean, I didn't think it was a great move. Like, I prefer an attorney who's actually being an attorney for this case. But whatever. Apparently.
I think it's one of those things where, like, he could probably elevate his platform even more by running for president, because then he can get all that fundraising money. And you know that never stops.
He's going to be like the less version of Donald Trump.
Well, I would argue that Joe Biden is.
Oh, no.
What?
Joe Biden is, no.
Joe Biden's a gaffe machine.
That's not that. Okay. Sure.
I like Joe Biden.
Sure, but that's not the similarities I'm going for there. I'm going for the more like, the more like broader themes here. The narrative role of outsider fighter with no actual experience coming in on a bullying loud platform, populist message.
Avenatti doesn't check off all the boxes for me. I guess personality wise, like, his personality is kind of droll. Like, I don't think he offers much or to the conversation or puts much on the table. I mean, Biden, if you're looking at personality alone.
Oh, wait, that was a negative comparison, by the way. What? Comparing him to the left Donald Trump.
Oh, no, I know you probably mean it in a more negative way, but I'm just saying, like, if you're looking purely based on, like, you know, having a personality that of being, you know, sort of a wild card, like, Trump and Biden, definitely basically two sides of the same coin.
I can see what you're saying, but I'm more concerned about the undemocratic leanings as opposed to the gaffing. But speaking of gaffes, I'm going to do a live reading of Trump's speech last week.
Oh, do it.
Have you seen this yet?
No, I don't. It's interesting. As soon as I leave work, I turn off for the day. I don't watch speeches, and I just can't do it.
Well, this was Trump at a fundraiser, and he said, "You remember Hillary with the coal, right? Sitting with the miners at the table, remember? That wasn't so good for her. So the people of West Virginia and all over, you look at Wyoming, you look at so many different places where they just, Pennsylvania, where they loved what we did, and it's clean coal and we have the most modern procedures, but it's a tremendous form of energy. In the sense that, in a military way, think of it, coal is indestructible. You can blow up a pipeline, you can blow up windmills. You know, the windmills. Boom, boom, boom. Bing, 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 wee. That's the end of that one, if the birds don't kill it first. The birds would kill it first. They kill so many birds. You look underneath some of these windmills, it's like a killing field, the birds. But you know, that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to windmills. And you know, don't worry about when the wind doesn't blow. I said, what happens when the wind doesn't blow? Well, then we have a problem. Okay, good. They were putting them in areas they didn't have much wind, too. And it's a subsidiary. You need a subsidy for windmills. You need subsidy. Who wants to have energy where you need subsidy? So, the coal is doing great. Yeah. So the hardest part of clothes is finding ones that fit. And with bras, it's basically impossible. Until now. Third Love has more sizes than any other brand out there. You want a perfect fit? Go to Third Love. Also, it's convenient. Because just go online and take their quiz and find your size. I know, it's easy to wear the wrong size bra and just get used to it. But seriously, there's a better way to live. With a bra that actually fits. Find the bra that fits you at Third Love and try that. Also, their bras have no tags, so no itching, and you can throw them in the wash, and they do just fine. Maybe you're not supposed to do that, but I can vouch for it. Just throw them in the wash, totally cool. So Third Love has more sizes, more comfort and quality, and a fit guarantee. Third Love guarantees a perfect fit, and returns and exchanges are free and easy. So Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone out there. And right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra. And get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off.
So what was this? I'm trying to remember.
Him at a fundraiser. And he was
on sequitur, but I mean, I know you're talking about gaffes, but I'm trying to figure out where's the gaffe, because it's just Trump speaking and, you know, Every time he speaks, it's not like he's saying anything interesting. I mean,
or anything like coherent.
Not interesting. I would say of political substance. I mean, focusing on clean coal. I mean, we've had this discussion about, you know, where the energy companies see the most value, and coal is dying. And I don't think a federal stimulus or government stimulus is going to do anything to make it some sort of booming industry like it used to be.
Well, he was like not even long, like what, 3 months ago, like offering subsidies for coal. And now he's attacking.
Right. And they're offering subsidies also to farmers who have been hit negatively by the tariffs.
Oh, God. We aren't even talking about the tariffs. That's like the low key story. It's still going on.
Yeah, no, that's always going on.
In terms of national security, our economy, like that just could, it's like a slow rot. Not even a slow rot, but it's not that flashy. It doesn't get much attention, but it is definitely undermining. I mean, on every level, like diplomacy in terms of our foreign relations. I mean, it's a rot, and yeah. he loves it.
Well, I tell you what also he loves, and that's owning the libs, specifically owning John Brennan, former CIA director under President Obama, this past week revoking his security clearance, which apparently, and before I get into like the commentary of it, every person who served in the government who has a security clearance, or at least as a political appointee, I should say, has been able to maintain their security clearance, whether they are brought in for consulting or, you know, they happen to get reappointed to a different position within the government. It, you know, sort of a way of, you know,
maintaining continuity.
Yeah. Like there's some continuity structure. Brennan probably would have never served under President Trump, just considering his rhetoric day to day on cable news shows or on Twitter. And I mean, Brennan's called Trump a treasonous liar or just a traitor. One of the two. Anyways, so Brennan had his security clearance revoked. And I mean, I don't feel particularly bad for the guy.
You don't have to care about Brennan to care about the larger issue here. Of using.
The issue is twofold. And I think it could have been handled better, by the way.
No, it couldn't have, because otherwise, how are they going to extract from Omarosa? It changed entire. That was when Omarosa was all over the news and they had to pull this out to change the topic on cable news. They'd planned this for like a month. They just hadn't done it until it was politically expedient.
I think the best way they could have handled it was to set a new precedent as soon as Trump entered the White House to revoke security clearances of all former intelligence personnel who no longer serve in the government. Could basically say that it's unnecessary for any former government official to hold a security clearance if they're no longer serving in government.
But that implies they actually have a policy behind this. There is no policy behind it. It's to punish his critics.
Right. And again, like that's why I feel like they could have done so much better than handling it. And yes, yeah, so it's not one. It doesn't silence Brennan. It definitely makes him louder. And
it silences others.
The idea was to silence him.
No, it wasn't silence him. It was to silence others in the government still are just out. They know he's not going to shut up.
But that's the thing is other people in the government would not speak out against this president because they work for him.
Or recently out, other people in similar positions.
But recently, and that's probably what they were trying to do is to dissuade them from speaking out. So if you want to make that argument, then that's probably fair.
Did you see he was trying to revoke Obama's clearance until McMaster talked him out of it?
McMaster did?
Yeah.
H.R. McMaster? Yeah. So
poor Bolton. This was a while ago, yeah. He was contemplating revoking Obama's security clearance.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not like Obama would serve any more time in government.
No, but like think about how ex-presidents are used in America.
It's definitely a new level of petty.
Well, but we use ex-presidents all the time as like ambassadors of sorts. Like we use them to do stuff that other people in the government can't do, like sending Jimmy Carter to North Korea every few years.
Oh, yeah. No, there's definitely value to having former presidents maintain their security clearances, because if they need to advise current presidents on matters of national security or foreign policy or what have you, it's obviously helpful to be in the loop and understand what issues are going on. And
I guess, yeah, I just feel like the whole debate about whether or not former officials should have security clearances misses the whole point. Like that's not even relevant to the current discussion. Because
I think lower level. I mean, I don't know if.
But that's not what Trump's doing. If Trump was trying to like achieve a policy goal here based on having former officials with still have clearances, that's one thing. But he's not. He is doing this because he thinks it's a way to shut up critics. That's all he's trying to do. His only policy goal here is to shut up critics and to take revenge of people he doesn't like. There is no other policy goal involved. So discussing other policy goals that might be implicated by it doesn't seem to be relevant to the current constitutional moment.
if what you're arguing is that Trump has been being completely petty,
No, not petty. Petty was way underplaying it. He is basically using the government to punish critics, to stifle speech, to minimize any chance of whistleblowers, to demand loyalty, and to undermine the ability of, you know, normal government processes to work.
Well, the one thing about, like, government loyalness, that's something he's been struggling quite a bit with, because very few people in the government right now are loyal to President Trump. And I understand why he did what he did.
Say that again.
I understand why he did it. And that's just if you are Trump, this is probably the best move you can make by revoking a security clearance to dissuade other people from speaking out against you, because it solidifies your power.
Well, if you're an autocrat that's trying to, you know, undermine democracy, then yeah, it is. But that's hopefully not something you want to support or tolerate. But you think people are not loyal to Trump?
In the federal government?
Well, okay, maybe not. Okay, I was thinking more political appointees.
Well, political appointees is one thing. I mean, like, Jeff Sessions is the one who always comes under fire by Trump. And yeah, it's called out more often than any other Trump appointee, because the DOJ and the White House should be separate. And I think Trump is frustrated by the fact that Sessions is not able to do his bidding like he thought.
Yeah. Sessions did what McCain did, and Sessions was totally right. Trump had no regard for his position, his, like, whatever happened to Sessions, he didn't care. And Sessions knew that, and he was not going to play that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think people need to realize that Trump has always been in it for himself. And, you know, I mean, I can't say with utmost certainty what is in Trump's heart, but from what we've seen over the course of his life is that he always looks out for himself above others, just by his actions, his behavior. And it seems to tear people that surround him apart. And we have these issues in the White House where people are essentially vying for his trust and loyalty. And I don't think we've ever seen this level of, you know, not cattiness, but like cutthroat.
Undemocratic. Like he's.
I wouldn't say undemocratic, but like within the White House, like if there's so much, I guess, division.
Cult of personality.
No, I'm saying yeah. Like with respect to loyalty to Trump, you know, everyone's trying to outdo the other, and you get that cutthroat culture in which, you know, people are tearing each other down to show how much they appreciate or love Donald Trump. And it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
It's Kremlin. It's like, you know, the Kremlin having, you're trying to read tea leaves of officials based on like how much loyalty they're displaying.
Speaking of loyalty though, mm-hmm. This is a good segue into Omarosa, who for the last week has been on the, cable news rounds promoting her new book, Unhinged.
You know how I know Trump is not qualified to be president?
Define qualified.
In no way capable of doing this job or any real job. It's okay. Because he didn't recognize that this is exactly what Omarosa is going to do all along.
Well, it's ironic, obviously, but irony is dead now.
It's predictable.
It's at this point so predictable and laughably sad, because, you know, Omarosa is another one of these characters who puts herself, I believe, ahead of everyone else.
But she is a character. I mean, she's just a villain on a reality TV show, and she's still doing that role.
Yeah.
So she's still true to character.
It's good drama. It's good political drama. I mean, basically coming out and teasing a tape exists of Trump saying the N-word. That's a pretty bold claim. I mean, I'm sure. I'm not going to like get into the merits or legitimacy of whether a tape actually exists, but just the fact that you're saying it out on the record is a pretty bold move.
Well, Sarah Sanders couldn't deny it. Like, if she's not willing to say flat out there's not one,
well,
that's she'll tell a lot of lies. The fact that she felt unwilling to say it.
Yeah, I mean, like, backing yourself into a corner and saying that Trump absolutely never said that. Yeah. That would be I mean, like, we would all know that she's lying, because
she would say it. I think if she felt confident, she would say it.
Yeah, whether a tape exists or not, you as a communications professional should never say that something never happened, because there's a good chance that that's going to come back to bite you in the ass.
But that's not a rule she always or usually follows. And there is a tape of people on the Trump campaign in 2016 saying that there is a tape, that the tape does exist.
Yeah, and I remember that. I remember when that story was circulating in 2016 that there was a tape of Trump saying the N-word, but that no one was going to release it. And at this point, like, if they release it, I don't know if it's – I don't feel like it's going to do much to shift the needle one way or the other. You know, there are going to be people saying that's not Trump, that's fake news. And
they'll know it's Trump and they won't care. There are people on Twitter. Yeah,
that's the other possibility, is that they'll know it's Trump and they don't care. He's still like a damn good president. Who cares if he said the N-word? Now, of course, you have everyone else who takes issue with it, which I definitely would, because – I mean, it's different from when Obama says it, because Obama obviously is black and he's allowed to say it. But, you know, then we get into these issues of like, oh, who's allowed to say what and who's allowed to not say certain words. So
I mean, I do not doubt he has said it.
We've already seen some spin about like, why should it be that only black people are allowed to use the N-word? Like, yeah, no, we're getting into those type of spins. So
I mean, he spoke admiringly of a conversation he had with Putin somehow, where Putin called Obama the N-word. So obviously he's not against it.
Wait, Putin called Obama the N-word?
Trump said this. Okay, so who knows what actually happened? But like in 2016, one of his like speeches, he was like talking about how he was talking to Putin and Putin called Obama the N-word. And he was not against it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I feel like most people in that situation would probably be like, okay, I'm going to pretend like I didn't hear that. But, you know, it's and again, this is pure speculation. I have no idea if Putin actually said this. I have no idea if Trump was there when Putin said it. But I feel like most people, when they are around someone they are trying to impress, calling them out on their racism is probably not the first thing that comes to their mind.
Yeah, but also then later bragging about how you had this conversation, how let's just say the way he brought it up was not a rejection of what Putin was saying.
Yeah.
When I hit about 35 years old, I realized I really need to take my vitamins. But since then, and it's been nearly a decade, I have struggled to get my daily vitamin intake in. Because you know what? I've got a drawer full of them. It takes forever to get all of them in. But then about 2 months ago, I discovered a new vitamin that I had been seeing online, but I thought I'll give it a try. And it's called Ritual. I gotta tell you guys, within a matter of about a week, I felt better, I was thinking clearer, I had more energy, and you know, I'm like in my mid-40s, I've got 3 kids, including 1 in diapers, I need all those benefits. I'm sleeping better. Ritual has really changed the quality of my life, and that is no joke. And I even got a bottle for my sister who's got 3 little ones, and I said, believe me, you need this. And by the way, you know, the other thing about taking vitamins, other than hating to have to take an entire regimen of them, is that a lot of them don't taste great. Omega-3 is really important to you, but most of the time, omega-3 capsules don't taste great. But the Ritual capsules are incredible. They have this amazing natural mint essential oil that actually tastes good. It tastes good. These vitamins actually taste good. I'm committed to the long term. I've subscribed. I subscribed even before. I'll be honest. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I subscribed to these vitamins before I even had any idea that they were interested in being a sponsor on our show. My taking these vitamins have nothing to do with the sponsorship. I am subscribed completely on my own. So let me explain to you how this works. Again, it's subscription-based, so you get no gap in nutrient levels. Every month, it's delivered to your door. It's $30 a month. You take 2 pills a day, and you are done. And the cost of this, you know, is like buying the omega-3 by itself. It fills the gaps in your diet with the best sourced ingredients. These vitamins are vegan, they are sugar-free, they're non-GMO, they're gluten-free, and they're allergen-free. And another issue I really have is finding vitamins that are gelatin-free, because I have certain dietary needs. And so these vitamins fulfill all my needs. They're also made in the USA. They've got no synthetic fillers or colorants. I love Ritual. And I've been telling my friends and women in my family to please, please give these vitamins a try. They really changed my day-to-day. Look, 95% of women do not get the vitamins and minerals that they need on a daily basis. Ritual is changing all that by creating a smarter vitamin with the 9 essential ingredients that women lack the most. It's the only vitamin that I take now. So go to ritual.com/45th and check it out for yourself. Listen, if you're not a woman, get it for a woman in your life. Choose clean ingredients backed by science. Sign up right now at ritual.com/45th.
Speaking of Twitter, I thought we'd wanted to bring up your man crush.
Oh, I didn't know if you were going to get to this.
Yes, I've noticed all the love. Sometimes he responds a little bit, gives little tidbits back to you. He acknowledges your presence, but it does seem a little bit one-sided right now. I'm sorry, Siraj.
And this is just, I don't really talk about this. I don't think I've ever really talked about this on a podcast or TV, but a weird obsession of mine is obsessing over people who are just naturally interesting to me on Twitter. And they could be smart, they could be dumb, they could be former politicians, they could be talk show hosts, they could be conspiracy theorists. And I have a, people have like this, there's some level of idolatry or idol worship when it comes to people like Trump or Hillary or Obama. But I seem to have this little idol worship going on with a former congressman from Illinois. His name is Joe Walsh. And whenever he says something that's very, and he was a big Trump guy, you know, big Trump supporter, voted for him in 2016, a Republican. And in the last like year or so, he's been somewhat critical of Trump because Trump has been doing things that, you know, set new precedents or can be downright embarrassing for the United States. Like, I think the one moment for Joe Walsh that really threw him off the Trump train was that it was this Helsinki summit where Trump met with Vladimir Putin. And there was that capitulation that happened between in which Trump would not acknowledge that Russia meddled in the 2016 presidential election. And he kind of cast doubt on the intelligence agency's findings of Russia being the perpetrator of those election meddling efforts. And I used to just refer to him as woke Joe Walsh, but now he's like really, really fucking woke. I mean, the dude is woke AF. And
limit the definition of woke.
Yeah. So like he'll like, I put him on blast on Twitter and I always like pick up on it and think it's really funny. And then I just started memeing him. And then, but it's like, I meme him, I meme Alex Jones, and I meme Jacob Wall. And all three of them have like different variations of devotion to Donald Trump. Like Joe Walsh, the wokest of the three, he is off the Trump train.
I'm not going to say I'm a Joe Walsh fan exactly, but I will put him in a different category from Jacob Wall and Alex Jones.
I'm not saying I'm a fan of any of these people, but these are the type of people on Twitter.
Yeah.
If you're on Twitter, that just give you so much life because you're like, how is this a real person?
Joe Walsh is interesting because he is extremely conservative and a little like, we're not talking like,
he came in on the Tea Party wave in 2010.
Yeah. We're not talking moderate conservative. We're talking like a little bit nutty.
Tea Party.
Yeah. Like he's like going to be a little bit like Hannity style.
And he's a host on Newsmax. And Newsmax TV is a, the boss, I'm forgetting his name, is Chris something. He's good friends with Trump.
So, yeah, no, he is a right-wing nutcase, but by God, he is his own damn nutcase.
He's his own man.
Yeah, he clearly is. He definitely has a lot of ideas that are some pretty terrible. But he is one of the few strong sort of voices out there where they have these beliefs genuinely. Like, this is his actual position, his actual beliefs. But he is not bandwagoning Trump at all. Like, he's not going to change his beliefs, but he will not put up Trump's nonsense either.
I mean, that's how people should be.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think he's acquiesced to politicians simply because they changed their position. And I mean, I at least respect him for that.
But he's a rare beast. Like he's one of the, I can't think of anyone else like him right now.
Yeah, very few people like him. He's definitely an interesting follow. For our listeners, you have to follow him. I mean, you can follow me too, because I'll just put everything that he tweets out on my Twitter feed.
Will.
And, well, Alex Jones, I used to meme a lot, but
it's not as funny. That's just awful.
Well, because he got kicked off of all these social media platforms, is not as much to meme. But when he does tweet, it's usually him filled with rage. And it's just delicious to capture and seize upon. And then you have Jacob Wall, who I've been on both sides of the fence trying to figure out if this guy's even a real person.
Oh, he's real.
And I heard he's real. I heard he's actually very smart and that this is all an act for him.
Who did you hear that from?
From reliable sources. And And so, like, I see that now, and I'm part of my heart is broken because I really thought that this person was A, not real, and B, if was real,
In on the joke?
No, not in on the joke. It was a complete, he absolutely believed everything that he tweeted.
I think he does, more or less. I mean, he's a little bit in on the joke, but not really.
It's starting to feel like he's more in on the joke, and as soon as I realized that, this, it's earth shattering. I really wanted it to be.
Well, he's a grifter.
I know he is.
He's banned from trading on the markets because he's already has an SEC violation. He's 19.
Yeah. So I think he's 20.
I'm making that up. I have no idea how old he is.
But yeah, no, he's definitely one of those trolls or just and he's the son of David Wall. David Wall was a surrogate for Trump on a number of cable news shows. So it's interesting to see where this guy is coming from. And I mean, I don't really speak seriously on this sort of stuff. But if you get on Twitter, these are just some of the accounts that are just so perfect. You're like, how are these even real people?
Okay, now we're getting really off topic. But have you followed the Kassenstein brothers?
The Kassenstein.
Oh my god! So I just learned what they are. I had them muted forever because they were annoying and getting retweeted. And then I saw this talk about them, so I unmuted it. And holy god, is it epic?
So long and short of the story is that Lachlan Marquet, who is a Daily Beast reporter, White House reporter with the Daily Beast, he quote tweeted a Kassenstein tweet. Because these Kassenstein brothers, Griffiths. They're part of the resistance.
They're Jacob Wall for the left.
Yeah, Jacob Wall for the left. The perfect analogy in comparison.
Oh my God, one of them follows me. I just.
Yeah, they follow me too. But anyways, they have a children's book that they're publishing, and one photo, one screenshot that they posted, or photo of the book, showed a shirtless Robert Mueller, he's portraying him as a hero. But he also had a bow tie on.
He's a Chippendale dancer. Full launch.
Yeah, so Lachlan Marquet quote tweeted that asking, why is Mueller dressed as a Chippendale dancer? Chippendales being how would you call it? A strip club for women? So anyways, that being said, the Kassenstein brothers started flooding Lachlan's Twitter feed with pictures of shirtless men, including Obama. It was just a big joke. It was so funny. And then I think everyone else got in on the act and started tweeting out, shirtless photos of men trying to trigger him. And I posted a meme of, that photo of Alyssa Milano dressed in the Handmaid's Tale outfit. I photoshopped Lachlan's face where Alyssa's face should be. And instead of, her holding a poster of, saying no Kavanaugh or no to Kavanaugh, I put the photo of the shirtless Robert Mueller in there.
I mean, it's okay. This is all funny. And it was so bizarre. I actually paid attention to it.
Yeah.
But also, it's really sad that we live in a world where the Kassensteins they have a platform and an audience.
Yeah. But I don't know what's, and this is the part where weird Twitter. There's just some things you can't really explain, and Twitter is one of them, and the goings on that happens on there, because Twitter is just its own animal. And the fact that people have such huge platforms on there, it's amazing. It's the best website and it's free, and I have no idea how long it'll exist, but I'm just going to ride it till the end.
Until the Nazis take it down.
Which they'll never do, because that's Trump's main outlet.
And of course, this is all tied back to Trump. His tweets lately have been about how there is censorship on social media with little proof to show for it. And he was basically saying, he didn't actually mention Alex Jones in his tweets, but my read of those Trump tweets was he was talking about Alex Jones potentially getting banned from Twitter and opposing it. So,
yeah, Alex Jones wasn't banned from Twitter. InfoWars was banned from Twitter. And so it was banned from Facebook, it was banned from Spotify, it's banned from Apple Music, and I'm trying to remember any other outlets.
Trump likes him. Trump thinks Alex Jones has an amazing reputation and is a great reporter. He believes in that nonsense. So he's now defending Alex Jones.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I, He's been on this show before, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, to end this episode, we should have some updates in the near future on everyone's favorite low-level coffee boy, George Papadopoulos.
Oh, Papadopoulos. I thought you were going to say Siraj Hashmi.
His sentencing is coming up, and things have not been going so smoothly for Mr. Papadop. His wife has been a spokesperson lately. She's gone on, you know, done tour and, like, talked about how he's gotten a raw deal and all that, and how he should, basically insinuating he should, like, dump his plea deal, which you can't just do. You have to, it's not always allowed. And is trying to take this to trial or something. But Mueller filed his sentencing recommendations, like, recently, saying what he should be sentenced to, and he's recommending jail time because apparently Mr. Papadopoulos was not very cooperative as in helping them out with the investigation. So
our GoFundMe is still dead in the water.
Ugh. He's going to go to prison. Probably not long. I mean, he might get the full 6 months. Whoop-de-doo.
Huh. Well, I mean, either way, it's just a really funny story in terms of that GoFundMe. I feel so bad. They were trying to, I think this target was $250,000. They only got like $472.
Oh,
I know.
That is kind of sad. Like, no one likes him. He's not, like, no one on the Trump side supports him. They think he's a traitor or low level and kind of dopey. Like, he's got no base. He wants to be, like, on the Trump team, but he's off the Trump team and no one else wants him. So he's just hanging around hoping to, like, survive this phase of his life.
Yeah. Well, that was a fun time.
Yeah. I do think by next week we'll have a verdict in the Manafort trial or a hung trial one way or another.
Yeah, whatever happens.
And then move on to the DC trial. And probably by the end of August, we'll see what happens to the other John Dean in this story, Michael Cohen. Because Don McGowan wants to be the John Dean of this administration, but so does Cohen. And apparently Cohen's been talking to John Dean too. Oh yeah, John Dean the rat. Did you see that tweet? That is definitely my new favorite tweet for like the past probably 4 months. Because it's just so telling of his mindset. Like, he's just, you know, he hears about Watergate, he sees the story, and his conclusion is that John Dean is a rat. That's one way to interpret the story of Watergate. All right, well, we'll be back next week, hopefully with a Manafort verdict or lack thereof, and hopefully no new crises in North Korea. Been pretty silent there lately, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, don't jinx it.
I definitely just jinxed it. But catch you later. Thanks, Siraj.
Thank you.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.